Hello. Good morning to you, or evening. It's Kelly O'Connell Show, Knockout Radio. Good day. It's June the 1st, 2020, and it's actually the evening, so good evening to you. Donald Trump promising federal troops. Now, from one disaster to another, Donald Trump cannot catch a break. He weathered a hoax Russia investigation, then immediately was hit by impeachment after he threw off the first one. Now, finally, they prove that the entire Russia investigation was a hoax. Now, while that was still going on, America was drilled by coronavirus. Now, even before the dust from this tiny menace settles, which has killed over 100,000 Americans, the U.S. was witness to an outrageous police murder of apparently harmless black guy, and now, in the aftermath, demonstrations are sweeping across this great land, along with massive riots, arson, and looting. This guy can't catch a break, right? But it's really scary, it's just amazing, and there's debate over what's actually going on. Now, today when Trump talked about the situation, which some blame on him, of course, he stated he would be readying the U.S. Army and other forces to battle the rioters, which people immediately made fun of because it's Trump's fault that we have these violent looters. And so, of course, it's all his fault. And my friend Pete actually told me everything is due to the fact that he misplayed the coronavirus hand because Obama had left a map, a roadmap, and if he had just followed the roadmap, then everything would be fine. People wouldn't be so frustrated because there wouldn't be so many people that had been locked up from coronavirus. I don't see it that way. But today when Trump talked about the situation, he stated he would be readying the U.S. Army and other forces, and previously stated that along with Barr, it was Antifa who was at the root cause of this. And Antifa, of course, is anti-fascist. And so they, along with the Black Lives Matter, are involved in all of this stuff going on. So that is the debate, or at least part of the debate, which is this just a violent protest because the way this guy was killed was so awful? And it did come back today from one of the pathologists that George Floyd was killed, was murdered by the gentleman sitting on top of him with his elbow or his knee on his neck, which I believe. But when you go from silent or nonviolent protests and it gets turned into this wild, and I mean wild, looting and rioting and burning down buildings, and it's across the United States, but of course it happens in Milwaukee first. And I've got a little bit more about that mayor, but here's the question. So now what happens? Trump is currently 10 points behind Joe Biden, which is unheard of, who's actually been in COVID quarantine for 4 months, and so because of that, he's made very few statements, and I think that's what helped him. And it seems like any mortal soul would have dropped out years ago, yet Trump still fights on. And do you think he has a prayer of a chance for re-election? He's 10 points down. What are his mistakes versus his achievements? Is it all his fault, or has he just been underappreciated? All right, we'll get to that. But I do want to point out a few things on that crazy goings-on. You know, it's not really fair at all what's happened to Trump, but he's, and I would say that he wasn't a baby. He hasn't complained, but he has been a little bit of a baby. But that part of him is actually kind of comforting in a way. He's human. So looking through some various stories for you here, I want to talk to you a little bit about the coronavirus. We're going to come back to the issue of whether Trump is guilty of misplaying the hand. I don't think he is. But what do you think? But I don't think he misplayed the hit. I think what he did, the thing that really bothers people, although they may not be able to admit it, is getting up on TV every day and bragging, which I think is a bad habit to get in. Getting up every day, reminding everybody it was the greatest economy in history, which it may have been for all I know. But, you know, now we don't have 3% or 2% unemployment. We have some unbelievable amount. We have 40 million people who are on unemployment, and they're reluctant to come back to work, too. I'll tell you that. Now, I've got a little bit here from with some of these articles, you can't even really tell what some of them say. They're so dense. But here's a little bit from BBC News, kind of a visual aid. And stock markets have fallen in Japan, Dow Jones, FTSC, which I think is in Britain. But you've got, at one point, down 35%, the Dow. Down about 28% was the Nikkei. And down FTSE was down the same amount as the Dow Jones. But the Dow Jones is now back up to about 16-17% down, 18.5% down, I guess is what they're saying, whereas the FTSE is still about 25% down, which is quite a bit, obviously. So I'm looking at FTSE, which is Financial Times Stock Exchange. It's London, yeah, so it is London. All right, so 30 million people have filed for unemployment benefits in the last 6 weeks. Now, you don't have any, you have almost nobody filing for unemployment, and then COVID hits. And in April, the first quarter, 3.3 million, and next quarter, 6.8 million file, and then the next quarter, 6.6 million, and then 5.2 million. So you've got really an incredible amount of people that are, you know, filing. So 10 million filing, and then up to 17 million, and then 22 million filing. And then in May, it goes down a little bit, 4.4 million and 3.8 million. So 8 million. So 17 and 8, what's that, 25 million? So oil prices dropping an incredible amount. In 2008, they're up to $150 a barrel. In 2012, they're up to $125 a barrel. In 2016, they go down to about $27 a barrel. And then 2019, they go up about $80 a barrel. And now they've gone down to zero and below zero. Negative for the first time, and they went down to about 45, actually $37.63 a barrel negative. That's incredible, isn't it? So, and I've got some predictions on the recession nature of what's going on. Canada, about negative 6% growth in 2020. China is from 6% down to 1%, and then back up to 9% in 2021. France is down to negative 7% growth in 20. Germany down to about 6%, 7% in 20. Italy is down to, they had no growth to begin with, but Italy is down to negative 9% growth in 20. Japan down to negative 5% in 20. In the UK, negative 6% in 20, and United States about 5.5% negative. So, all right. It is looking at, well, I don't want to get into this stuff too much more, but I will tell you a little bit about China. In December, their industrial production was up about 6%, 7%. And then January to February, it was down 14%. And then in March, it was down 9%, pardon my yawns. And the same thing, car sales in China fell down negative 80%, negative 81%, and then they're just down to negative 48%, about negative 50%. So, incredible impacts from these coronavirus. And then on top of that, you've got what the impact is going to be from the riots. So, anyway, see if there's anything else you want to see. So basically, Trump had stated that he wanted to bring in federal troops, whether it was the army or some other group. Now, a friend of mine said that's against Posse Comitatus, which is the statement that America is not supposed to have a standing army doing things inside of America, doing army things inside of America, unless it's training. So, but I think Trump acted for two reasons. Number one, that country is just getting torn to shreds. There have been so many buildings that have been attacked, and the owners who come out to try to defend it get beat up always. And then all the stuff gets stolen and they get torched. That's the kind of the worst case scenario that happens a lot. So my question is, why have many different cities allowed this to happen in states? And the answer to that is that the leadership is lacking. And somebody pointed out, whether this is true or not, the states that are really struggling with this all have liberal mayors, and they're afraid to use force. And so the guy that could have kicked this off, I say if the person who this started in his city, Milwaukee, if Jacob Frey, he was a top-notch marathon runner, and then he got out of that and went to law school. He graduated, but then he ended up being what? Guess what he is? A community organizer. So what do you get trained when you're a community organizer? Do you get trained how to deal with crises? No. Do you get trained how to deal with the sudden mobs or this type of thing or fire or whatever bursting out, you know, your city bursting out in flames? No. Or even people getting beat up. Your training as a community organizer is to divide and conquer. And so that's what's happening, is these people are dividing and conquering on him. He didn't know what to do, and he should have immediately called the governor and say, this is way over my head. Let's get the National Guard in here. And he didn't do that. As a matter of fact, he told his policemen to stand down. And so what happened, the looters went after the precinct building. And somebody was telling me, well, they had to do that. And that's just not true. You get a whole bunch of National Guard and you get state troops and you borrow police from other cities, even if it's across state borders. And you get 20,000, 10,000, 20,000 troops there, and you just repulse these people. You don't teach them the lesson in this, which is if you're angry enough, and if you're big enough, and if you're violent enough, then people will back up and just take it. So because it happened in Milwaukee, this is my belief, but I defy you to use your logic and come up with another conclusion. If you allow a riot to break out, and, you know, burning and looting and beating people, then it justifies it everywhere else because it says this attack against this black guy, this murder was so bad that the entire country has to suffer. And that's basically the message. So who are the people behind this attack? And I'm going to look up here right now how many cities. I think it was like 180 cities yesterday. Here's Al Jazeera and The Guardian, a couple of couple of foreign papers. Here's Wall Street Journal. And you've got so many cities starting in Anchorage and ending in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And so you've got 120 cities where there have been has been unrest. Protests have erupted. Now, you've got 21 cities, or pardon me, 21 states, where the National Guard has been deployed. And that, why do you have a National Guard? You have a National Guard because sometimes you need a strong police presence, or stronger than a police presence. And, you know, you don't have the military. You don't want the military roaming around because of posse comitatus. And so, and this has just come up a few hours ago in postings. It's going on. There's a conversation about this right now. But Posse Comitatus Act, I'll just read it to you real quick. The author was Rutherford B. Hayes in 1878. And United States law, 18 U.S.C. 1385. Purpose of the act, in concert with the Insurrection Act of 1807, is to limit power of federal government in using federal military personnel to enforce domestic policies. All right, so... All right, so here's the idea, and this is the same thing in ancient Rome. Ancient Rome did not allow a standing army. You couldn't bring an army into Rome. And because they didn't want somebody like Caesar or Sulla or one of these great generals to show up with this army and take over the city. So the Romans were crazy about democracy, their form of democracy, until they became a tyranny. And that's why Julius Caesar was killed, because he had become a tyrant, a one-man army, or a one-man rule. And so he was killed by Mark Antony. So there's always been a lot of nervousness about this, unless you're a communist, and then you're just a moron. But excuse me if you're a communist, by the way. But so there's a break against this, but I don't see, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I just don't know that this necessarily breaks posse comitatus laws. So you've got these people. I get into this debate with Pete. And the debate is over whether you could blame all of these riots out there on you have to put all of this stuff into play. And what I mean by that is that you don't want the federal government walking around with a military, but if these groups go from town to town and from state to state and keep destroying things, what's going to happen? And what's the purpose of it? So who is Antifa? So Antifa was started in the late 1980s, in the same area, in Minneapolis area, to fight skinheads. But it goes back to the beginning of the last century, where they were fighting the fascists, supposedly. The fascists that are, supposedly this group of people. Now, there's a guy that wrote an article, or actually a book, and it's the only book that I saw that seemed like it was worth anything. And he basically argues, do we accept violence? Yes, we do. But why do we accept violence? And his answer is because the people that they are violent to have already taken away the speech rights of other people. And so they're not going to sit back and try to debate these people when they know that they're just going to have their speech, their free speech, taken away. Instead, they're going to go after and fight fire with fire. So these are people on the far left. They're Marxists. And I didn't see anywhere where it called them not Marxists, but I saw what they had talked about in their stuff. Mark Bray writes the Anti-Fascist Handbook. So they write in there about the need to have equality in income. And I'm kind of talking off the top of my head. I can't remember how they put it. But they talked about class. They talked about egalitarianism. And they talked about a lot of things that I think really only leftists really worry about. And I talked to a friend of mine about what's going on. And his request is that people would be more equal economically, income or pay. And I said, why? I said, if you're living in a $100,000 house, why would it bother you if somebody down the street had a $1 million house? And he said, because it's not fair. And I said, how exactly is it unfair? So, I mean, he couldn't really answer that, but here's the thing that I said to my friend's a Christian, and I said, you know, this thing going on with leftists, with Marxists, with socialists is based on one of the Ten Commandments, a violation of the Ten Commandments. Well, he was kind of interested by that, and he said, what are you talking about? And I said, thou shalt not covet. And he said, this isn't coveting. I said, that's exactly what it is. You're looking at your neighbor. What does the Bible say? Thou shalt not covet. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's ox. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. You see somebody has something else that you don't have and it makes you jealous. That is a bad, that is a failed, that is a disastrous basis for public policy. All right, I'm looking up. I've got this book here which was on sale for $2.99, I think. Oh, Karl Marx is in only one of these. All right, so there's got to be socialism in here somewhere. Oh, nothing. Well, trust me. Oh, there is socialism in here. It's found 109 times, or at least social. And let's see. So anyway, I don't have to dig through this to tell you that these people are kind of supposed to be like libertarians, except they're far left. And they think it's okay to use violence. Which is all leftists believe that, basically, ultimately. Now, they're saying, the Washington Post is saying, when Trump wants to designate them a terrorist organization, which was his big announcement yesterday, his big announcement today was he was going to use the military to go after the thugs in these cities, which I think is going to get him a lot of positive response, even though it's going to be attacked relentlessly. He is going to be able to knock down these protests. Now, what does Antifa want? Well, they claim that they want to tamp down fascism. And then they say that, you know, the question comes up, what is fascism? They can't define it. And one of the reasons they can't define it is the word is used differently now than it used to be. Fascism in the days of Hitler and Mussolini was very close to communism. The difference, you ask, was that the fascists kept the owners, the builders of businesses in there with their businesses. The communists would just throw them out and get anybody to run a factory or whatever, which would then, you know, implode. But the reason that the Nazis and the Italian fascists were successful, more successful economically or more successful in terms of military might, is because they kept the people who built various companies in the position, but the government told them what they could build. So you have a lot of these companies that are still around, such as Hugo Boss, who was the clothier, the haberdasher of the Nazis And Hugo Boss is still around. As a matter of fact, I have a tie by Hugo Boss. Another one, Mercedes is still around. And Mercedes was, you know, so fascism today is, they've changed the meaning of the word. And the meaning of the word, and I actually wrote I wrote an article on fascism a while back, but let's see how it is defined by somebody like Webster. So fascism, according to Webster, one often capitalized political philosophy, movement, or regime such as that is the fascisti that exalts nation and often race above the individual and that stands for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, enforceable suppression of opposition. And that is another thing that the fascists loved was they loved race. And so, you know, the main policy of the Nazi fascist government was the elimination of the Jews. Now, you might say, well, I knew they killed a lot of Jews, but how could that be their main policy? And I don't know how to explain that other than to say that that was a particular thing that Hitler hated was Jews, even though I believe his grandmother was Jewish. And I think a couple of people in his family were Jewish. So he was Jewish, because to be Jewish is the result of matrilineal descent, your mother, your grandmother. So they did have a lot of crackpot theories, and since we're talking about fascism, they were interested in a lot of esoteric things. They wanted to go and get, for instance, the sword of decision, I think it was called. I think that's the sword that pierced Christ's side. They wanted to go get the Holy Grail. All of these things they thought, they didn't believe in the Jewish God or the Christian God, but they believed, they were they were not people of faith in that sense, but they were superstitious. And if you ever saw the movie with Harrison Ford, Raiders of the Lost Ark, some of that is in there. They're looking for the Ten Commandments. Sword of decision. And here you've got a little bit on this. A book on Amazon by Ann Campbell. And I don't know if I lost my internet here, but oh no, here we go. Oh, okay, that's a novel. But the Sword of Decision is this mythic sword that what the Nazis were looking for was artifacts that would mean that they couldn't be beat. So they were very superstitious. They also thought that in the Himalayas was where the master race, the Aryans, came from. And so somebody up there, one of his chief lieutenants, went up there, and then they believed that there was a race of people inside of the earth. So they had a lot of weird ideas, many, many more that I don't mention here. And then, so fascism does have this racial element, and if you go back in time, fascism, the fascist ideas, you could associate them with Darwinism, the master race or the master animal, the survival of the fittest, and eugenics. And some of the earliest people who were involved in abortion in America were also eugenicists, because they believed that, putting spirituality aside and sentimentality, we need to breed the strongest humans. So I realize that's probably inconvenient, but all right. So you've got the anti-fascists now. Okay. So here's the problem. They have a hard time defining fascism, which is bad and good. It is bad because you can't really explain who you're really fighting against, but you pick them out like the skinheads. But it's good because you could go after any group and say, we've got a right because of the law or the rule of pragmatism. We have to go and wipe these people out before they wipe us out, the skinheads and all these other groups. And Nazism, neo-Nazism, new Nazism, that type of thing. So they are out there, and here is the theory, is that, and I don't know how much of this has been qualified. I know that the LA riots were aided by Black Lives Matter. So Black Lives Matter is doing stuff in some places, and Black Lives Matter has 40 chapters. But the neo-Nazis are all over the place. Now the Washington Post is saying you can't rule these people as domestic terrorists because, number one, there's no law that would allow you to do that. It's not part of the code. Number two, they also say that the fascists are not a group per se, that they're more individual. Well, I mean, that's probably somewhat true, maybe a little bit true, but it's also false, because if somebody in the anti-fascist movement is putting out information, you know, in your state, you want to go over to this other place, and in this other state, I want this group, this fascist group, to go to New Orleans. And so they're apparently crossing state lines. And so I had a question for my friend today, Pete, when we're arguing about this. I said, let me ask you something. He said it was a joke. It was a conspiracy theory to say that there was anti-fascist moving around and starting riots. And I go, so you're saying it's impossible? He said, no, I'm not saying it's impossible. It just didn't happen. Well, how do you know whether it happened? And my friend Pete is a very smart guy. He's a successful lawyer, very, very smart guy, charming, and a good mind. But I believe that he assumes too many things when he's debating or he's thinking a lot of times. He assumes, because it sounds far-fetched, that it didn't happen. Yeah, I don't think you have a right to do that. I mean, these anti-fascists and Black Lives people were popping up around where these crime scenes were. And so I buy into that. I just don't claim to know who started what where, but I know that there was another group that was in Portland, and they had a different name, and I'm going to get the name for you, but it started with PNW, Pacific Northwest, and the rest of it was kind of a little bit random, but the rest of it was Youth Liberation Front. If you ever hear anything like that, liberation in a name, front in a name, you know what you're dealing with is some outsourced, some wing of Marxism or Leninism or Maoism. So you remember when the Hearst daughter was in this group that, and I'm going to look that up right now for you, but Hearst daughter was, she was kidnapped and she got brainwashed. Symbionese Liberation Army. And there were a lot of groups at this time, Symbionese, I don't know why I'm having a problem with that tonight, Symbionese Liberation Army. United Federated Forces of the Symbionese Liberation Army, SLA, was an American left-wing terrorist organization active between 73 and 75 that considered itself a vanguard army. All right, what is vanguard mean? And I haven't even read this article. The vanguard comes from an idea from the left, from Karl Marx, that there has to be a vanguard. Now, here's the interesting thing about Marx. Marx is kind of an intellectually oriented guy, right? So he said, basically, that you're helping the blue collar, the so-called proletariat of the population, the blue collar workers, the factory workers, you're helping getting them enlightened and you're protecting them. But what do you have to do to be able to achieve that is you get the intellectuals, you get the students, you get the professors to join in. It's very self-centered, very, very self-aggrandizing. You get this group together and it becomes a vanguard that leads the revolt, the revolution. And so, all right, I'm going to pop Vanguard open here. I hope I'm not completely embarrassed. But in the context of the theory of Leninist revolutionary struggle, vanguardism is a strategy whereby the most class-conscious and politically advanced sections of the proletariat or working class, described as the revolutionary vanguard, form organizations in order to draw larger sections of the working class in. So I might be a little bit off, but I mean, I'm generally have the idea. But, all right, so what would the purpose of the anti-fascist Antifa? Antifa. What would their goal be? Well, they're trying to have a revolution. How do we know that? Because all of the groups like that believe what Marx believed. Marx's number one goal was to have a revolution. Why is that? All right, Marx believed that there used to be, in the old days, there was people that were working and they were basically serfs, you know, they were land slaves. And then as there was some growth, intellectual growth or whatever, then there was capitalism. And then capitalism builds up a lot of wealth. And then after that, you have to have a revolution because the workers are being taken advantage of. And the result of the revolution is for a socialist order to come to be. And in socialism, the government creates everything and delivers everything. It doesn't own everything, but it makes it and delivers it. And then the final stage of socialism or Marxism is communism. And supposedly you're going to get rid of the need for government, and what you're going to live in is it's just a very simple and humble and enjoyable life in a commune where everybody shares everything because there's no private property. Now you're going to say, well, yeah, that's full of crap. And it is. But that's in the minds of these people. And the anti-fascists are fighting against fascism, but they're really looking for a better world. The problem is the better world contains a lot of death and mayhem and murder. So anti-fascist Antifa is looking for a way to help create a revolution. Now, what Lenin said, and Lenin was, or pardon me, let's see here. So I'm looking at a quote for you. There was a idea, you know, you remember the Let No Crisis Go to Waste, Rahm Emanuel. Vladimir Lenin, who was the first Marxist to have gotten into power in any meaningful way, he took on Marxism and he wrote there was no explanation in Marxism and Marx's work how you built the state, believe it or not. So Lenin comes up with all of this application and he writes it up and it becomes Marxist-Leninism. And it's a very important book because it's applied, I wouldn't say practical, but it's applied Marxism. So in one of his books, State and Revolution, he wrote, "The governments of Europe and America exist to exploit the people, and they're only overthrown through violence and bloodshed." So he said that there had to be a violent overthrow. So they believe in that, and then they believe in agitprop, which is agitation and propaganda. You know what propaganda is? It's when people are, you know, brainwashing others, and the result is people get a confused and often a very emotional view of life because they feel like they're getting taken advantage of. And then agitation is using this brainwashing to try to encourage them to throw a revolution. So then you have something along the lines of mobocracy, whereas you go and you try to talk people into throwing a revolt. And an example of this is black nationalism. Many years ago, maybe 100 years ago, 75 years ago, the Marxists went to the black communities and they promoted revolution. They promised absolute 100% full equality. And they were going to, if they threw in with the Marxists, if they went against the American government, if blacks did that, then they would be given Southern Black America. And so there was a shift in some blacks to become, go from Christianity to Marxism. And the Black Panthers, for example, were, and believe it or not, Martin Luther King, even though he was a Christian pastor, had Marxist beliefs. So, now, here's another interesting thing about the anti-fascist you don't want to forget. And according to this guy, Bray, Mark Bray, who wrote this, and he is actually an anti-fascist himself. He's an Ivy League professor. He writes that Antifa revolutionaries are almost always anti-police, but as anti-capitalist with a sort of policed abolitionist lens. So what does it mean if you're anti-capitalist? Well, you're a critic of capitalism. You're a critic of the rich. You're supposedly fighting for the poor. And what are you? You're a socialist. You're a Marxist. You're a communist, right? So these guys are anti-police. Now, why would a group be anti-police when we know that you can't have a society without law and order in it? And the reason they are anti-police is if you got rid of the police, you could do whatever you wanted. You could force your ideas on other people. And so they say, Mark Bray says that anti-fascists view police as a problem, not as an answer, as defenders of the capitalist order and also all too often as sympathizers with the far right. So this guy, Mayor Frey, says to the cops in his city, "Stand down." And so the cops stand down. So you don't really see cops in a lot of these videos, most of these videos where they're going through the city and they're smashing up places and lighting them on fire and stealing all kinds of stuff. Well, why not? I don't know for sure. I can tell you that Mark Frey doesn't have the training for a crisis. You could see that in his eyes. You know, by the time you have a crisis, it's too late to get trained. But he was also a community organizer. And what do you think most community organizers believe? I would be shocked if any of them were Christians. I was also informed that he was a porn star, but he's a, you know, good-looking guy and everything. But a community organizer tries to divide and conquer. And so one of the reasons that people get into community organizing is they don't believe in the church. They want the government to act as a church. But in any event, this guy says to these people, stand down. They stand down and they leave, and then the mob comes to this third precinct and they light it on fire. Now, I don't know how bad it was burned, but think of all the stuff that would have been in a precinct, all the weapons, all of the equipment for the cops, some police vehicles, but it would also have a lot of evidence in there. So it's a disaster. But if you have an army, do you let a group of rabble rousers, a bunch of untrained punks, show up to your army and your army leaves a base and they just let them take it over or burn it down? No, you wouldn't even think about that. Why? Because a lot of this stuff is psychological. A lot of this stuff, a lot of the mastery of your opponent, it's in the mind. You establish it in the mind because you put out your mojo, you put out your toughness or your standard or your je ne sais quoi, whatever it is, you put out you project a certain powerfulness. And so what happened when that city abandoned that precinct without a fight? Think about that. It was without a fight. And the claim is that they had to do it to protect the officers. I don't believe that's true. I think that if you're inside the police building and the protesters come and they start kicking in the doors and smashing windows and pouring gasoline on it and everything, you get your guns with rubber bullets and start shooting. And I think it's okay to have a violent defense, just because the victim that started it off, that was unjustly killed, suffered violence, doesn't mean that a cop can't ever do violence again. I mean, look, these people are out of control. So all across America, you've got these riots, you've got theft, you've got looting. Now, do you think that Trump is at fault? And in what sense is he at fault in this situation? Now, should he have got the National Guard out that earlier? Well, we have a country in which there's a federal government and a state government, and the federal government is not supposed to tell the state what to do all the time. He was criticized for not having these things that help people breathe. I can't even remember the name of them, but ventilators. As if the United States government is supposed to have a massive stock of ventilators to provide ventilators for every city, every state that has a crisis. So you see there's a problem in that thinking. Now, people were mad at Trump for getting up every day and talking about the coronavirus, which has now been mostly forgotten. They were mad at him. So he didn't want to speak on this, I don't think, as much. And he ends up not really doing too much, pissing some more people off by saying that there was a weak response. But the cops in most of the places were called in, but the governors in most of the places where they were hard hit called in the feds. They called in some Secret Service. They called in other state feds too, but I don't think this is Trump's fault. People are upset at the way he talks, but I think he's got good decision making. My friend claims because he screwed up the coronavirus, it led to this. In no sense does the coronavirus lead to this. These are two separate events. In no way does the coronavirus cause this. I will admit that it complicates it. But what do you think about his idea of taking the feds in and using it, you know, letting the feds go over and sort these problems out? And I would say it would be an absolute disaster to not stop these riots, because you could have an entire city destroyed. All right, so I'm looking for a good explanation for the posse comitatus. Now, the original posse comitatus, or comitatus, is the power or force of the country. This is Black's Law Dictionary. The power or force of the country, the entire population of a country above the age of 15, which a sheriff may summon to his assistance in certain cases as to aid him in keeping the peace and pursuing and arresting felons, etc. The Posse Comitatus Act, Comitatus Act, an original intent of which was to end the use of federal troops to police state elections in former Confederate states, prescribes the role of the Army and Air Force in executing civil laws and states. Whoever, except in cases and under circumstances expressly authorized by the Constitution or Act of Congress, willfully uses any part of the Army or Air Force as a posse comitatus or otherwise to execute the laws, shall be fined not more than $10,000 or imprisoned not more than 2 years or both. All right, so these are my thoughts on that. At some level, a posse comitatus, I think, is resisting Reconstruction, using the Army to do Reconstruction. So I think, in general, it's a good idea. Now, exceptions. National Guard. Another one, pursuant to the presidential power to quell domestic violence. Federal troops are expressly exempt from the prohibitions of the posse comitatus. Congress has created a drug exception. The Coast Guard is exempt. So anyway, I see that it's a good move by Trump, and it's absolutely necessary, and he's going to get an incredible amount of criticism by this. But what's the criticism going to be based on? It's either going to be they're going to blame Trump for the fact that there's violence now, or they're going to say that he's trying to become a dictator, which clearly he's not, since he waited to do this. Or the criticism is just going to be that he is a bad person, he's an incompetent fool, and everything he does is stupid, which is my friend Pete's position. So I don't really buy into that. You've got to quell the sense of lawlessness and anger and fury and bloodshed and arson and attacking people. Because, you know, there's a mania. There gets to be in the air a sense of violence and a sense of retribution, vengeance. And a lot of this is what's going on. And are you telling me one rogue cop justifies this attack against the entire nation? And you would have to say, I mean, would you not have to say that the person who they're fighting over, George Floyd, his brother, is opposed to the violence? And I think you'd have to say that George Floyd probably himself was would have been against it. So, anyway, what do you think is going to happen? I suggest as soon as they start bringing out the military, it's game over because they're not going to win. Now, what should happen to Antifa? And here, I want to ask you one thing. What do you think about using cameras and other evidence to find out who was doing all of the rioting and the burning and the attacking and the stealing, using as much of that as we can to prosecute these people, at least some of them? I mean, it seems to me you've got to do that. You have got to do that because you're just putting the idea out there that any time you have some bad thing that happens in society that is due to a knucklehead or some sort of a scumbag, a bad person, that you're justifying riots and beating the crap out of property owners and stealing all their stuff. What part of protest is connected to stealing things? And how, because somebody's in the same racial group that you are, subgroup, how does that give you a right to go steal somebody's stuff who a lot of times is of the same race? I mean, a lot of these businesses that are being destroyed in black areas in Minneapolis and in other places, they're owned by black people. And if it wasn't for that thing, it would have never been justified. Well, I really appreciate you listening in. Really having a good day here. And I challenge you to try to think, how is everything going to play out? I ask you. How is everything going to get to the next level? Anyway, you have a great day. Well, I'll see you tomorrow. Kelly O'Connell. And thanks for listening in. We'll get together. I've got a setup coming for the phone so we can talk, and I'm going to do this live pretty soon when I get everything organized. And I've also got a podcast, a vlog coming too, and I've got all the cameras and everything, and we can talk about doing that as well. So you have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.